Thanks for listening to the Koi Pond on Podcast One.
Don't fake it, just bust a move. This joint is gonna get you in the mood.
Yo, it's the Koi Pond. All right. First of all, good morning, Kalen.
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
I'm good, man. It's fun to see Kalen late to the studio.
Just barely late.
That's what he calls it, just barely late. But it was fun to see everybody here on time, and then Kalen's like, hey, fuck. let me get my keys. Like, he didn't even have an excuse. He's the best. Are you done doing your push-ups?
I'm doing my push-ups, man.
So Chase has this new morning ritual that he does, and he wants to share it with everybody that's out there right now that's listening out in the cubicles, or maybe at your workplace, just before your meetings, your morning meetings. Mm-hmm. Those meetings are bullshit, by the way.
Yeah.
Nothing ever gets accomplished.
Yeah.
You don't look forward to going to those meetings, and there's a reason why. Because it's bullshit. Nobody in that fucking meeting cares about the whatever it is that you guys want to discuss. How can we increase sales? No one gives a fuck. Everybody in that room can't wait for the bagels to come out,
mm-hmm.
because meetings always means bagels.
Yeah.
Right? Bagels and then that little carton container of coffee. Right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's always there. And then that fucking community cheese, the cream cheese spread.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That everyone stuck a fork in. Right? Everyone's probably stuck that fork in something else.
Yeah.
Or not the fork, but a knife.
For sure.
And you just I get at least two of those bagels. I get two of those bagels. That's all I worry about. You come late to the meeting, guess what's left in the bagel rack? Name the fucking shitty bagel that's left.
Oh, onion.
That onion, the poppy seed deal?
The onion one. Yeah. And I'm not an onion. The onion.
You're not an onion guy? Wow, that's weird, because I'd be the guy that gets the onion. I'm the guy that gets the onion.
What's the one that's left? The
Whole wheat. Go fuck yourself.
Whole wheat bagel.
Bye-bye. You make those? And I think sourdough is only good if there's a toaster.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's something about heat and sourdough. It becomes delicious.
Yeah, raw sourdough is
raw sourdough?
Not good. Yeah. Not where the party's at.
Yeah, you can lick a wall and it'll taste better. Put cream cheese on a wall. It's the same texture, same flavor.
And that the taste sticks around all day, right?
Yeah,
If you eat a raw one.
Yes. It's just ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, candy's good sour. Bread,
No, not good. No, I like sourdough as long as it's heated up or toasted. Or grilled.
Toasted.
Like a grilled cheese with sourdough bread?
Oh, my God. Or the Jack in the Box sourdough thing.
No, that used to be my favorite.
Jack in the Box. Oh, that was the go-to.
That was the go-to.
What was it called?
It was called the Sourdough Jack.
The Sourdough Jack.
Ingenious, right?
It was genius. Yeah. And you dipped it in their Jack sauce. They did call it ranch.
And I'm sure it had 2 cubes of butter on it.
For sure, bro. Yeah. For sure. The ultimate ingredient is butter, bro.
Yeah.
This butter. Solves every problem. That solves every culinary problem.
Yeah. Every culinary problem. Add butter, bro.
Yeah. That's it.
Add, bro. You can stick butter in coffee. You know what you get? Butter coffee. This coffee is so much butter. What's up, Dre?
What's up, man?
I'm chilling. And then your daughter okay?
Good. Everything's good, man.
Okay.
Things looks good. I talked to her, and they had a lip sync battle last night, which is
in the hospital. Oh, she's out of the hospital.
She was never in the hospital.
She had surgery last week.
It was an outpatient. Like, she sent me a video. She was walking normal the same day.
They do knee surgery same day now.
Yeah.
The fuck?
Two tiny holes. Boom, boom, done.
And they fixed it.
Yep.
You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, man.
I thought this was a career-ending injury. They saved it?
It's not the 70s.
There was no one standing around the table going, scalpel. Move that light closer to the knee. These goddamn glasses.
Do we have a Sawzall?
There's blood all over his face mask. Mr. Simmons, we're going to have to amputate. What? It's a sprain. It's a fucking sprain, man. She's going to be hopping around in no time.
What the fuck? Hopping around. What the fuck are you talking about?
You know, it was an experimental procedure. We try to operate with a butter knife. Boy, were we wrong. The knife broke off inside her knee.
What? You used a plastic knife?
What type of wood would you like for this leg?
We have this one called the Jack Sparrow. What the fuck? She's an athlete.
We also have it in mahogany.
What? That's expensive.
Mahogany
is expensive. Oh my god. So, anyways, let me get back to. I digress. I'm sorry. I forgot that I had to ask Andre how AJ's doing, and I'm glad she's in good health and she still has her degree. Not degree. Her scholarship.
Absolutely.
They can't take that away from her. Can they?
Oh my
they
can. God.
They can.
That
the
hurts.
Way scholarships
bro.
Are written. It's definitely all in favor of the university.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So,
you know, here's the thing about universities. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry. If you recruit some girl that needs help going to college and she snaps her knee during practice, hook her up with an education.
Hook her up.
Hook the bitch up.
Hook her up.
Hook her up. Fuck you. Fuck you. Give her a side job. Gatorade girl. Jersey basket girl. She goes down the lockers with a basket. Throw your jersey in. Give her fucking something.
Or the jersey gun.
Yeah, the jersey gun. Yeah, you shoot the complimentary t-shirts up to the 300 section. Those poor fucks that ain't paying for shit. Nope. You're going to let this girl back on the street?
They
really?
Send her home. Send you home.
They send you home with a fucking knee and a thank you. Oh, you can keep the jersey. Go fuck yourself. What kind of shit is that? What is that?
It's called capitalism.
But is it?
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Nobody can do a hookup. No one can do a hookup. You're a billionaire. You can't do a hookup.
Right.
Yeah,
I've seen Oprah Winfrey give away $5 million on one show one day. It was all underneath everyone's fucking chair. Look under your chair. A diamond ring.
Yeah.
Keys to a fucking Civic. Now, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not making this up.
Yeah.
You can't give one girl or one guy a free scholarship if they injure themselves during practice. You really have to fight the legalities.
A lot of schools do, but there's some that, you know, that are...
If I was the dean, I couldn't even do that. If I found out that something happened, my heart would fall out of my chest.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially when you know the numbers in the books. You know the dean knows the numbers. He looks at it every day and masturbates. Like, yeah! I'm getting a massage in Thailand.
I mean, especially if you have...
Or she. Yeah, the dean, the she. How's that? Yeah. I made the dean a guy. Or the female dean. Either one, the dean.
Yeah.
Here's the female dean. Woo-hoo! I'm getting a massage down under... I don't even know what that means. You know how all the women like Thunder from Down Under? I don't know what I was thinking.
I knew what you meant, but it didn't sound good.
Yeah, it sounded stupid. That didn't even sound right. That was so dumb.
I mean, but especially if they look at, like, if you have big time football at your school.
Oh, come on.
90,000 people.
A game. You know, Tennessee, I think, has over 110,000. It becomes the world. It becomes the biggest population in Tennessee.
You know,
like,
really?
It's a city. It becomes a city that day.
You know, I tried to figure out how much revenue a football game makes, and I just stopped because the math was too high.
It's like counting hair on your chin.
I was like 95,000 times whatever.
Nope,
the fuck
you can't
cost,
figure it out.
I was plus TV revenue?
Concession? TV revenue, I think, would probably be the least amount.
Yeah, but you
probably
still add that on.
Yeah, you tack that on. But you know goddamn well they make a ton of money on beer.
Yep.
Yep.
What is it, Kaylin? What's the actual number?
Are you talking about basketball stadiums or college?
College football.
College football.
Oh, college. Stay I just saw guy. It was Syracuse, 105,000?
105,000 for Syracuse? What about Tennessee? I thought Tennessee was the biggest. I thought Tennessee was like 120,000. It's so enormous.
120,000 for what?
Like, for one game. They pull in that many people.
What?
Yeah, bro. Yeah, bro.
College football.
College football. That's the reason why they don't put any names on the back of those jerseys.
Number one is Michigan Stadium at 107,000.
107,000 wow. people.
Per game.
Per game.
Per game. And you know there's that one asshole with their left blinker on that takes forever to drive out of the goddamn parking lot? Just fucking up for 107,000 people?
Tennessee's at number five with 102,000.
102,000 at number five. Can you believe that?
And how many games are we talking?
Ish. Like five a year, five home games, maybe?
Five to six, right?
Wow.
Home games, right? I don't know how many games in a season. Check this out. So this is Chase's, back to Chase's morning ritual.
Okay.
And for all you know, like I said, this is the beginning of this show is I was trying to start off, you know, something positive, a little morning ritual. If you're about to go into your meeting, if you're about to start your day. You know, open the register.
Right.
You're about to open the register. You're cleaning up the sales floor. Whatever it is that you're about to do, prepping the eggs, getting the bacon out. What else is some morning stuff? Changing the. Changing into your lab robe.
If you're a chemist, for all the chemists out there,
there's a lot of chemists still. There's not. They're not all of them are unemployed. Bunch of homeless dudes with lab coats on. I used to be big in the 70s.
And most importantly, washing your hands. No matter what your job is, washing those hands.
Is Chase's morning ritual. And I want everyone that's listening to listen right now. This should help you. Go for it.
Just hop down and do some push-ups.
That's all he had. And he made it sound so lackluster.
Just hop down
and do some push-ups. You could just make it sound more.
What you want to do is you want to find your. You want to just find it in you, muster up whatever you got, lay down on the ground, and just max out on your push-ups. Yes. Just do as many as you possibly can until you can't anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's something about that push-up, man. There's
something about that push-up.
Yeah, man. It gets your heart rate going. Your chest starts to swell up. All the blood goes to your to that muscle, your pectoral muscle. You start to straighten your back. Mm-hmm. You stand a little straighter. You feel a little bit more confident.
Yeah.
But you know what else? After you do like 100 push-ups, you think you can kick someone's ass. You know what I mean? Like, you feel a little stronger inside, and there's that one annoying person at work. You're like, man, fucking say something, bro. Say something right now. I just did 37 push-ups.
Say something.
Say something.
Try me.
Try me. Today's not the day, bro. I'm stronger than you. There's blood in my chest, bro. My heart is racing, bro. Try me.
You know, there's an easier way to get there.
How?
Four shots of espresso.
Bro, four shots of espresso is equivalent to about 200 push-ups.
Yeah, really?
For sure, bro. Liquid push-ups. In fact, that is the name of my energy drink.
Liquid push-ups,
bro. That's like a new thing from Monster.
Liquid push-ups.
It's like Mountain Dew, the Mountain Dew Blue.
Uh-huh.
That's going to be like Red Bull push-up. Like, I'll be the new.
I like it.
It feels like you just did 200 push-ups, man.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, I'm gonna write that down. Red Bull. That's dope. See?
It makes you do more push-ups.
Yeah, man. It's worth it. I was watching Netflix last night before I went to sleep. I always do that. I fall asleep about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, sometimes 4, almost 5. And I'm not even joking. I get stuck in a Netflix whirlpool, man. I go to documentaries and I'm done.
Yeah.
And I can watch a documentary on anything, man. I really can. It's interesting. I'm like, whoa, really? He used to eat peanut butter? And it's like, he didn't look like a peanut butter guy. So, bro, I'm watching Quincy Jones. There's a new documentary called Quincy.
Uh-huh.
Bro, I mean, this man shits on shit. You can't fuck with Quincy Jones.
Yeah.
I always knew Quincy Jones from Michael Jackson.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Off the Wall and, of course, Thriller. Like, you remember that logo, the Q that was at the bottom of the album? Mm-hmm. Bro, I had no idea what this man did.
Yeah.
Bro.
What'd he do?
Everything.
What?
Everything. Movie scores. Orchestra.
Oh, yeah.
Went to France and learned under the queen of orchestras on how to prepare and write orchestras.
There's,
he lived there for 2 years.
Queen of orchestras?
Yeah, I forget her name, man, but she was literally the...
I mean, is that an actual title?
Well, yeah, he gave her like the... It was something like the queen. Like, she was the...
Kind of like Aretha Franklin's Queen of Soul.
Queen of Soul. Yeah, she was like the queen. Exactly.
Got it.
But even more than that, you know, there was soul before Aretha Franklin. You know what I mean? Like, this woman was kind of like, she was the god. I can't remember her name. Watch the documentary. But Quincy had to learn. He had to learn from her. And he literally left his family, went to France for 2 years, and literally sat and learn how to orchestrate and organize and compose, write like it's a language. They got this one scene. Everything was documented, by the way. They have everything documented. They show him just writing a score. You know the notes?
Yeah, he just wrote music notes like it was cursive.
And he's just...
Wow.
You know, like putting a square here and then a little note here and then this here. Like literally writing it like it was cursive.
Wow.
Across the board. I mean, there's a... He was literally... That was his matrix.
Yeah.
You didn't speak that language.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You really didn't, man. And it was to the point, man, he was, bro, you got to see. Anyways, I'm preaching too much, but you got to watch Quincy, because anyone that thinks they've worked hard, you haven't even touched the surface of work, man.
Wow.
This man shits on anybody. Anybody, and this is back in the day where you had to really bring a goddamn string quartet into the studio.
Wow. Right.
You had to, all the way up until the late 70s, almost early 80s. They were still throwing in string section, horn section, everything.
And it sounded so full.
Bro.
It sounded so full.
Bro, have you heard Rock With You?
Right.
It's it's a symphony.
Yeah.
It really is. You can literally watch a symphony. And they play Rock With You. I don't even know if it's called a symphony. Whatever. The whole whatever they're called. Are they called a band? Whatever they're called. I don't know what they're called.
An orchestra?
An orchestra.
Yeah.
Bro, this man, I'm telling you, man. Anyways, this dude was a living cat. He had 9 lives, bro.
Oh.
This motherfucker should have died 9 times legit.
What?
Legit. Should have died, bro.
And he just got up and kept going.
Got up and started writing music, man. He had an aneurysm in the 80s. You know, like you said.
I remember that, yeah.
Actually. Where they had to cut his whole head open. You ever see that scar across the forehead of Quincy Jones?
Oh,
it looks
yeah.
like the letter, looks like an A. Like they had to cut his whole head off. Like cut his whole like skull open and take care of that aneurysm. And then when they found that aneurysm, there was another aneurysm. Wow. And they were like, that shit's about to explode in a couple weeks, bro. They told him that. Wow. After he survived,
wow.
they were like, hey, we're about to, you know, there's another one in there, and we're going to have to get that. Bro, 1 out of 100 die from aneurysms. And it was crazy. It was crazy. This guy, just he wrote so much, his brain is just, like I said, it was modern day for him back then, before computers.
Yeah.
That was his matrix, bro. He spoke a language no one ever spoke. He worked with every fucking body, man. They showed a picture of his office, you know. Well, it looks like a mansion, by the way. And it's just covered in albums, just platinum albums everywhere, bro.
Damn.
Everywhere. They always ask Quincy to produce, because any project, they always go, hey, Quincy, can you produce it? Because they know he'll get them there. He'll get anybody there. It's a phone call.
Wow.
They had this one scene. Anyways, I won't keep talking about it, but it's just, it was inspirational, man. It made me, like, last night, I was just like, okay.
No, I saw that. I saw it up there. but I didn't want to get into it because I was like, I'm going to be up all night watching this.
Yeah, it's one thing. Of those. Yeah, yeah. It, and it's long, bro. It's 2.5 hours, I think, or something over 2 hours.
But I'm going to check it out, definitely.
And I don't think it's enough. It's not enough, man.
You still want
bro,
more?
Bro, he has so much that Michael Jackson was only 7 minutes.
Damn.
And Michael Jackson is what put him on the map.
That was a huge part, yeah.
Michael Jackson is what made him worldly. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But it's not enough time for all of them. Like what he did for Frank Sinatra. Did you know he fucking wrote Frank Sinatra's best album?
I did not know that. Nope. Wow.
Yeah. Frank was listening to a Count Basie album and saw that it was orchestrated by Quincy Jones, and he just called Quincy and he was like, I need you on my next album. And this is during the time where black guys were not allowed to work with white guys.
Wow.
Not allowed. Not allowed to go to Vegas and work. Not allowed. And Frank was like, this dude is coming everywhere with me. And his band. His black band.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's dope.
It was good. Man, it was so goddamn good. It was so good. Yo. Anyone listening to me, if you think life is hard, please watch Quincy. You ain't done shit. You haven't done shit. This dude worked his brain so hard that it blew up twice. It blew up twice and he survived it. And during the documentary, he almost dies twice in the documentary.
Wow.
And I had no idea Rashida Jones was his daughter.
Oh, you didn't know that?
Well, yeah. I kind of knew, but it was kind of like, it was so cute because she was the one narrating and walking him through.
Oh,
and,
wow.
You know what I mean? It's cool, man. Anyways, that's my Netflix. That's my new thing. My Netflix suggestion of the week. Watch it. It's inspirational. It's not, you don't even have, he wrote for everybody. He wrote everything. Wow. Every movie you can think of that had scores that were kind of like, that sounds good. It's probably Quincy's. That good. You ain't done shit yet. I ain't done shit yet. You want to set a bar? You want a level that you want to reach? Then just try and reach Quincy. If you're not there yet, then you haven't started working yet. You haven't even touched the fucking surface, man. Right?
No, you're right,
man. That's how you look at it, man. You know you've done something when Dr. Dre walks into your studio and goes, what the fuck? Literally. That's exactly what Dr. Dre was saying. And that was only one wall. One wall. And he was like, what the fuck?
It's like, I knew you, but I didn't know you like that. Wow, you did all that? Damn.
Like that. I didn't even know. And then they started playing like some instrumental shit. And I was like, yo, I know that one.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, Dre took that one.
Yeah.
Like he has so many beats, bro. Talk about beats. You know, these cats do beats on their computers. Mm-hmm. This dude did beats in his head. There was no like violin section off to the left. And he goes, all right, now I'll do this real quick. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas now, you know, you can press a button and hear a sample of what you want to fuck with.
He had to put the whole thing together.
Together.
With people. And keep in mind that people talk back. People have attitudes. That's a whole different level of production.
Yes.
Because you got to take 20 people.
Yep.
And make that all come together to create this sound.
Yeah.
Now it's like, oh, I can do this on these machines.
But what's crazy is he invites all these, you know, the best, you know, the best violinist, the best blah, 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 into it. And then he hands them the sheet music. And then he starts recording. But my whole thing is he's like, hey, you see this? It's going to sound good. Which means he already heard it in his head.
Wow. That's a legit composer. That's a composer.
He's our Mozart.
He's
our Beethoven. Wow. That's what that dude is. That's what Quincy Jones is. That's why when he calls, they come. It's so cool to see it, man.
He's a really, Seattle really cool. guy, too.
Is he? Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. His dad moved to Seattle.
Garfield High School.
He's from Southside Chicago from the 30s.
Right.
But he moved up to Seattle so his dad could work on the boats, man. That's how they got work. Wow. All the ships that were coming in, they were hiring anybody that knew how to wrench. And his dad knew how to work a tool, man. That's pretty cool. He's only got one son. He's got 7 kids. Dude, he's pretty badass. Shit. I ain't done shit.
It's all perspective, right?
I woke up today and I was just like, what am I doing here? What am, not here, like bad. Like, what am I doing? Like, why am I acting tired? This dude was on another level.
Yeah.
Never slept. Anyways, that was fun. That's what I want to talk about, man. Let's talk about motivational shit.
Yeah.
Things that'll inspire you. That's what you should feed yourself. Every damn day, feed yourself with inspiration, man. I know sometimes you get sucked into like a wormhole of negativity. I catch myself doing it too. And I know I say this a lot on my show, but man, if you could just, when you know you're doing it, just find something positive to look at every once in a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even if it's easy. If you're having problems trying to look for inspirational shit, just Google hummingbird and just watch videos of them. Watch a hummingbird feed itself. You're like, God damn! This dude is flapping his wings at a million miles per hour just to sip something.
For some sip!
From a house that he doesn't even know about. He's stealing! Just to survive, bro.
It's all perspective, man.
Yeah, bro.
It's all perspective. Like you look at things that you're struggling with, and then you look at somebody else's or some other thing in this world struggle, and you go, "It's not that bad.
It's not that bad.
I can keep pushing through this."
Yes.
And what also makes you stronger, just like surrounding yourself with other people who are masters of their craft, people who are trying to do it. And if you don't know anybody that's doing it, start researching those people and surround yourself with that, with that energy, with those people.
Bro, let me give you a for saying that. Let me give you a perfect example of negative motherfuckers that you work with in the office, okay? I go to my bank and make a deposit, and there's this beautiful young lady. And she's like, oh, my God, I love your work, blah, blah, blah. And then she finally, the other day, yesterday, she goes, oh, by the way, she complimented you. She loves you. Oh. And she was like, it's Chase coming worthy. He's so funny. And I'm like, hey, bitch, he opens for me. Slow down. I said that internally. But she was just like, yeah, I want to be a comedian, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I'm being helped by another teller. So she moved into her space. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. So I don't know if the other teller was trying to be funny, but you know those negative funny people, and it's kind of annoying. But like, she was going, yeah, I'm funny. Like, I make everybody here laugh, right? And then the other two tellers like, yeah, she's funny. And then the one that she was saying next to was like, no, she's annoying. Like, ugh. And just like that type of shit.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you don't like girl, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even if you got a problem with girl, like, That's not for you. That's not for you to do that. Who left you in charge of bringing somebody fucking down?
But you're also bringing everybody else down. Yeah, you're taking all the gas out of the fucking...
Yeah, you gassed out the fucking work environment.
Yeah.
Like, she's spunky. Like, I'm there. I'm a customer. You know what I mean? She's indirectly complimenting me. You're fucking it all up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's a perfect example of negative energy. You know who she is as a person already. You can't fix that. That bitch is going to be negative her whole life.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to be in front of a TV at 70 years old with like pistachio shells on her belly. You know what I mean? Just miserable. Just eating a bag of pistachio shells, watching Wheel of Fortune at 70, and just fucking shells on her fucking... These fucking puzzles are hard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. She really, like, it upset me. It really did. You know what I mean? Like, this girl, like, maybe she is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she isn't. Maybe whatever the fuck it is. At least she's got a dream. And at least she's being vocal about it. What the fuck is it that you want to do with your life? That you got to be the one to shit on someone else's dream? Go fuck yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that. I hate it. Because the way she did it, too, was snotty. It was snotty.
Yeah.
It was mean. It wasn't funny. You know, you had a little bit of negative. There was something in there. There was something underneath what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's probably her own fear of not chasing her own
her
shit.
Own.
So,
and she can't be vocal about it.
Yeah. She can't. You're right.
And so what she does is like, it's like, I'm going to put a damper on your shit because I'm afraid to chase my own.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, that's the loudest voice in her head.
Yes.
And she let it take over her body enough to actually say some shit.
Bro, it was mean, man. Yeah. It was so uncomfortable. It ended nowhere. To the point where I was like, all right, you guys, I'll see you later. Like, it was so whack.
Let's play a hypothetical.
Okay.
Let's say that you're in there and you are who you are. That's all legit. But then let's say you were going to give her a shot.
Yeah.
You had a thought in your mind to give this girl a shot. Like, you know what? I really like this girl. I like her energy.
Yeah. I would never put her on. No.
No, no, no. That's, okay. That's not what I'm about.
Oh, what, were you, not what do you mean?
I'm saying that's the hypothetical. Okay. Let's just say that was the case, right?
Okay.
And then here comes the negative chick.
Yeah.
That brings all that down, says one thing.
Yeah.
And then now you go, maybe not. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, you meaning maybe I agree. Oh, I see what you're saying. She convinced me not to.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. If that were the case, like that's a hypothetical. Yeah. I know I'm not saying that you would. I'm saying that if that was the case, if you were thinking that way, she would have killed the whole thing.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Imagine if that was that girl's chance. Let me give you an example. I was watching Quincy Jones, okay? And I go back to Quincy because here's a perfect example. He was looking for someone for The Color Purple. Mm-hmm. I bet you didn't know that was his movie, right?
I didn't know that.
Well, now you know. And not only was it his movie, he fucking wrote the score. That's how good he is. And he got Steven Spielberg to fucking direct it. He's that good. So,
wow.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Wow.
But he was looking for the Oprah Winfrey character. Mm-hmm. They couldn't cast that character. And he was in Chicago visiting, right? And in his hotel room, he clicks on the TV and Oprah's local show at the time, local, I don't even think it was really national yet. Or maybe it was, barely.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And he's like, that's my character. That's who it is, right there. Oprah's never acted before. He's just, I know that's the one, right? Now imagine if he did that and someone negative goes, oh, she's just a fucking horrible talk show host.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Imagine if he did that in front of like the housekeeper cleaning his room. A negative housekeeper. Yeah. Oh, she's just, oh, God, she's horrible. And, God, she's so annoying and not likable and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
That's not for you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah, exactly. No, totally. I agree with you 100%. Thank God he discovered her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because look what she ended up being. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that chance was given. So, yeah, I agree with you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I hate people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Who the fuck are you to fuck with someone's destiny or dream or anything? Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, and you know what? You were on the same vibrational frequency of energy that everybody else was on in there as the cool, fun lady, as everybody else there.
Everyone.
And then you saw somebody else from another fucking planet.
The devil. That bitch is the devil.
It's just out of sync. Completely out of sync.
Yeah.
Like, come from that world? Yeah. We're not in that
world.
We're
not even over there.
That's not why I come to this bank.
Yeah. Who are you?
She didn't even have the awareness to know that she was out of sync. Do you follow
that? Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you ever walk into a room and then, you know, there's a conversation going on?
Yeah.
And then you're like, I'm going to wait the conversation out.
Yeah.
Because I'm not on that wave.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Right?
Yes.
You don't just walk
100%.
In. You don't just walk in and start with your bullshit.
Yeah, man.
Because that's what you want.
We're all playing double dutch. You got to wait for your chance to jump in. And
I never. Yo, I'm not a big guy or anything, but I'm big with my voice, man.
Yeah,
and when I'm not feeling you, dude, this is before I was doing, before I got who I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was working at Nordstrom Rack, whatever, if there was somebody that I was not agreeing with, I let them know. And I always did it in front of people.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Always, man. Like, yo, bye.
Yeah.
Yo, this isn't here for you. You need to go over there.
Mm-hmm.
Go somewhere else, bro. We're having fun, man. Bye. Have a bad day. Have a bad day. We're having a good day over here. That's what we're having right now.
That's a good thing to say. You know, we're having a good day over here.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from, but
the forecast said partly cloudy. So move clouds. Fucking rainy ass clouds. See, I want everyone at work right now listening to this right now. I want you to do it right now. I want everyone to hear this right now, and then everyone at work just move their head towards that one negative person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they all just look and go, you motherfucker, that's who he's talking about. Go eat that onion bagel. Talk about positive people, man. This pod is so much fun, but sometimes we like to bring in people that are just so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to do. Can we go to break first? And we got Jonathan Kite coming in. This dude, fucking talented. I dare anybody to fucking say he wasn't. He still would have moved on. You know why? Because he's that talented. Jonathan Kite. If you guys haven't heard of him, then you need to get that. He's always on Corolla. And if you want to follow him on Twitter, it's Jonathan Kite. J-O-N-A-T-H-A-N Kite. K-I-T-E. And he'll be in a couple of seconds. We'll be right back with the Koi Pond. Hey, check this out, you guys. Podcast One has nothing but great, great personalities hosting great, great podcasts. And one of them just happens to be Pro Wrestling Hall of Famer and action movie star Stone Cold Steve Austin. Or you can call him Steve Austin. That's right, Steve Austin, man. This guy is everything. So go to Podcast One and listen to one of the greatest wrestlers of our generation. That's Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's right, Steve Austin on Podcast One. You're welcome. We're back with the Koi Pond. And first of all, I want to say hi to Chris Loxamana.
Hey, Joe.
He's here.
Jay Johnson.
Yeah,
Loxy.
Yeah, we're happy when we see you. We don't get you as much as we used to, but we love it when you do come in.
I try to come in early, but I had the stomach flu, man.
Yeah, man. Whatever excuse you want. You know what I mean? Say whatever it is you want to fucking say to be late. But stomach flu. Yeah, stomach flu is always a good reason. We're back with Jonathan Kite, you guys. This dude is hysterical. You've been on Corolla numerous times, Corolla favorite, and that's hard. That's hard to be a Corolla favorite. I want everyone to know that. Corolla, you know that. Chris, you're not even a Corolla favorite.
No.
Yeah.
Everyone hates me.
No, he does. He loves you. I'm joking.
No, but yeah, it's tough.
It is tough, man. And when he has his handful of favorites, bro, I was happy when I got it.
He's a great guy because I grew up listening to Loveline.
Yeah. Oh my God, yeah, bro!
So it was really a thrill. Well, isn't?
Don't you think that was like ahead of its time? I feel like Loveline.
Oh my God,
Loveline, and then the Man Show. I felt like those two were just like ahead of its time. Yeah. Like it wasn't supposed to be for that era, but that's the perfect spot for it to be.
Yeah.
Like Loveline. Like there's never gonna be a Loveline.
Not like there's, that. Not like the not brutal like, honesty.
No.
I remember
yeah.
you and heard how good questions. It was. Yeah, and they gave great advice, and it was super entertaining.
Yeah,
without being like gimmicky.
Yeah,
right.
And so I feel like there's because I think a lot of times when something comes after it, you're sort of trying to replicate it, or you know, the internet or all the stuff that's available out there. It's everything is influencing, but yeah. they didn't really have anything.
Yes,
they were kind of their own thing.
They were their own thing. Yeah. You're right. That's what I love the most. What inspired you to get into it? Like, did you already know you were like already talented? Yes, that's obvious, right? Like, you knew already that I'm going to get into this business doing what I do. Or did you know you had talent, but you were like, which angle do I go?
I had, I was so crap at everything growing up.
Yeah, me too.
And and so I got really lucky because I went to school where they had a great fine arts program, like even junior high and stuff. There was It was really in the curriculum. And so I decided to go into acting, and then when I'd always wanted to do stand-up, and then I got a television show, which was awesome, and we already knew we were coming back second season.
What's the show?
It was called Two Broke Girls.
No. Oh, Two Broke Girls. Yeah.
And so we were on, but it was awesome because, you know, for actors, you never know when your next job is going to come.
Yeah.
But we knew that the show was doing well so that we had a second season, so I had a summer off, so I said, I always wanted to try stand-up, so I used that summer to start writing and getting out there and doing stand-up.
Yeah. So how long were you acting before you landed the big gig, before you landed Two Broke? How long? How many auditions?
A million. I mean...
Do you hear that? You fucking hear that?
Dude, it
no, was... You don't even have to finish the word million. Million. That's how many fucking auditions, you guys.
That's how tired I was of those auditions. I couldn't get through the word.
I know your feeling, man.
Yeah, millions. I mean, the thing
millions.
Is, and that's the thing is, you never know because the part that I got was written for a guy who was 20 years older than me. So, and it was for a Ukrainian chef. And so, like, you never know. You just have to go in and do whatever you can do.
Wait, did you go in for a Ukrainian chef?
Yeah, I grew out my hair. I used to have really short hair.
Was and
the I
description had, with accent?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, so I got, I had known the casting director was a friend of mine, and she brought me in, and she said, you know, there's probably no chance, but you should come in and meet everybody, because, you know, those pilot auditions, they take forever. They take months, you know?
Yeah.
And so I started growing
they
my
do.
Hair out.
They fucking do,
forever,
man.
Dude. I looked like the Count of Monte Cristo in prison, the whole, when it was done. And, like, I had my beard just kept growing, and so by the time I tested for it, I looked like a totally different dude than when I was when I first went in.
Unbelievable.
And so, yeah, you had to do the accent, and they wanted a guy who was... you know, I think in his 50s.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. So you just never know.
And you had to sell it.
You had to sell it. Yeah. They didn't, when I went in for Warner Brothers, I don't think they knew I was American.
Yeah.
Because Whitney Cummings is one of the creators of the show, and Michael Patrick King from Sex and the City, and Whitney was like, don't talk with an American accent.
Jesus.
Just go in there. And I dressed like the guy that I wanted. Yeah. So I wore like an undershirt that was sleeveless, and I stained it with mustard. And I put on these like really weird
this is for the studio test?
This was for the original audition, because I was like, there's no way I'm going to get it.
Wait a minute. Are you serious?
I swear to you. And I wore a hairnet.
Wow.
Because
you went in full character for the original fucking audition. You deserve the part. I go in with sweats and my glasses.
But maybe they're like, we like it now with sweats and glasses. That's the thing. A lot of times they don't know what they're looking for.
Weird. It's so weird.
Because you look at what the breakdown, you know how it is? Like, they give a description, right?
Yeah.
But then you see who gets it. Like, I went in for a ton of stuff this pilot season.
Yeah.
And then obviously it didn't go. Some things went my way, some things didn't. But you see who got it and you go, oh, that wasn't the description at all. So the thing is, I believe, especially in something that's at that early stage, you can convince them.
Yeah.
If they go, oh, we like our idea, but what you're bringing to it is so unique, I think we can do something here. And I think that that's maybe, I don't know. Because I was like, I got to do something, because everybody else who was there, like John Lovitz auditioned, a lot of guys.
No doubt.
There was
for your part.
Yes, and he was in the initial. I don't know what, you know, I'd seen people there, but I was the youngest guy.
Give me one line from a scene from Two Broke Girls. Just give me one line.
So my Beth Bears, who played Caroline Channing, she was one of the girls. She would come in, and we worked at a diner, and somebody was choking, and I was the chef in the back, and she was like, oh, what do you do to stop people from choking? And I appeared in the pickup window, and I said, I just back up a few inches.
That's a good line.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay,
great.
So, okay, do it one more time. This is your, and I'm going to show you what John Lovitz reading the line. You ready? You do yours.
I just back up a few inches.
I just back up a few inches.
they wouldn't be able. They'd be like, we need to cut that down. We ADR that in speed.
One more time. Go for it.
How do you stop someone from choking?
I just back up a few inches.
They're like, we're overtime.
My dick.
Yeah.
My dick. My dick.
That's fun.
I don't know. They had like, you know, they didn't know. They don't know what they could, because you have to think, when you're in that waiting room, it's not like there wasn't like 10, you know, white guys with sleepy eyes like me. So it's like, I knew.
That's never in the description.
They're never just like, what?
It'll never be in the description.
What if an owl was a person? You got anybody look like that? You got any owl people?
Jonathan walks out. Wait, I didn't even get the owl part?
Yeah, there's a guy somehow with like bigger eyes.
Big eyes? That owl is wide awake.
There's just a basset hound that books the part.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, sleepy, sad mother. So when I go in, a lot of times it looks like a UN casting call.
That's funny. They
say that there's one, and now obviously with the diversity push, they really don't know what they want. They have ideas and stuff, so you just got to go in. So the one way that I thought I could do it is I could maybe look a little bit more like, you know, what they were sort of maybe in that idea, and then, but I wasn't going to, you know, like I wasn't going to put on an old age make. I wasn't going to like Benjamin Button myself in there. So I just, but I do look older with longer hair and a beard.
Mm.
And so I thought that might help out a little bit.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. It really is that hard, bro.
Yeah.
People don't understand how hard it is to get these auditions in and then book, you know.
No, it's like one. And then you got to think, for a show like that, which, by the way, Whitney and Michael Patrick King, that is a huge show for CBS, Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
I mean, they must have seen a ton of people for all those parts.
Yeah.
And then you think, you know, no matter what it took, like, that's why I always respect people that are working, because you know, you have no idea what went into getting that part.
That's why, and then when you see these actors and actresses walking around, man, you can only respect their game, man.
Yeah,
because that's their life, bro. They literally go in with the mind thought, like, I'm going in.
Yeah,
I'm not coming out.
Well, I think being around the industry, you figure that out. Like, yo, it's not that easy. And so when you see an actor who was in something, and then they're on a break for a while, and you're like, well, what happened to him? Now in the industry, you know, they're just not working.
It's
it's hard. They didn't fall off.
No.
It's just hard to book. Yeah.
I love that it took, it probably did take a million. Because let me ask you a question. Like, it was 999,999.9 times, do you think you'd have done that same, would you have gone at it the same way?
So I did it. So the first thing I really booked in LA was I booked this this Cox Communication, you know, like the cable provider commercial. Mm-hmm. And they wanted a caveman. And a buddy of mine auditioned, and he was like, there's three parts. They're like a caveman, and they talk about how like dial-up was you know, you need to evolve, I think was the whole campaign or something. I don't even think it made it to air. So there were like three parts. There was like a business guy, a guy in a mail room, and a caveman. And I showed up to the audition, and I had really long hair at the time.
Yeah.
And I showed up to the audition in like normal clothes, and when I got in the room, I like took off my shirt and I had on these ripped jeans. Uh-huh. And I went I went apeshit. I went crazy in the room, and they had a bucket of chicken, and I remember I was jumping off the walls, and I was just like, you know, trying to like figure stuff out, and I went ham. And I remember that I booked the part, and they wound up cutting the mailroom guy because they wound up doing another scene with me just going crazy. Wow. And so the truth is, like, because at the end of the day, like, you think of cavemen, and the Geico people were really big back then, you know, and like those commercials, and they were even doing a sitcom at the time. But I thought to myself, like, well, that's just a guy in makeup. I mean, obviously those are talented people. I'm not taking that away. But I would have to show them that if they wanted to do anything physical, they're not just going to assume that I can do that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You have to like really put it out there, because the perception of like jokey cavemen on TV was normal people in makeup. So it's like, okay, well, I don't have that makeup, so I can just show them to the best of my ability.
That I'm a hairy motherfucker.
And I'd be crazy like him. That's exactly right.
That's one thing you can't get taught, too, man, is instinct and trust.
Commitment.
Yeah. Commitment.
Doesn't always work. I mean, sometimes I'll go in there and I'll do stuff to the, you know, the best of my ability and sort of like really push the envelope. And the truth is that sometimes it just doesn't go my way. And then I'll maybe see it later and they go, oh, they wanted something really subtle. Or, you know, I mean, I do subtle stuff, too. But it's just that I knew in my mind, I thought, well, that's going to help book that, you know,
nice.
But I have to sort of break it down, because I think that there's an idea, there's a box. And at the end of the day, they want you to push the edges of that box, because I think a lot of people go, I'll stay in the middle and I'll be safe and I'll go, oh, well, at least they won't think I'm bad or something. But at the end of the day, I think like you have to sort of push as far as you can on the edges of that box without going over it. Because once you sort of go over it, they go, oh, that was great, but it's not really what we're looking for.
Yeah.
And so I try to like not figure out what they want, but figure out what I can do and sort of service the thing that they're looking, you know.
And is that something that you learned over time with the auditions, with the number of auditions that you've done? Is that something that you've kind of like honed in on?
I mean, when I went to university for this. Okay. I mean, and so you sort of get to try a lot and fail really hard, and then sort of see it. Because I think when you go do something out here, a lot of times, and I don't know if you have this experience, a lot of times you don't know why you didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like they just go, oh, it doesn't work out. We wanted a black guy, or like whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so you sort of have to figure that out. But at university, they're not putting anything into, you're not booking the job. I mean, you do place and stuff, but when you're in those small rooms with a professor and you're just sort of figuring out your technique, you're sort of training your instinct like as good as you can be. So it's when you walk out of that room, you go, yeah, man, maybe they wound up going with a woman. Because I auditioned for something this year where they went through a ton of people, and then they were like, no, we don't want a guy. We now want this part to be female.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously it had nothing to do, you know, unless I was Bruce Jenner in that situation, I couldn't like fix that. And so at the end of the day, like, you have to go in, because at the end of the day, if you start second guessing your instinct, then you're screwed, because they actually hire you for your instinct. Like, Two Broke Girls was on 6 years, 138 episodes.
Yeah.
They're trying to figure out, a lot of times people go like, oh, I'm just trying to book this job, but that's not what it's about. They're trying to figure out if you can help carry a series for as long as you can go. And I don't think, I'm not saying people don't think that way, but that's like a crazy thing to think about.
Yeah, you have to think like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, man.
They're not trying to think like, oh, let's see if we can get through this one pilot, fingers crossed.
Let's get this robot and just feed it lines. Yeah. No, they want to like, what can he do
even funnier than the lines on the page. Yeah.
And can you do it for a long period of time?
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, what is the longevity? And are you going to have, like, because, you know, there's a lot of guys with tricks and stuff like that who do stuff, but it's, you know, but like, what are your instincts telling you? Like, are you going to run out of tricks? Or, like, can you come up with more bits? Mm. It's like how sketch shows audition people, you know? You do, like, five impressions or whatever. Because I actually, the first time I ever was aware of you was I auditioned for your sketch show.
Oh, shit.
So this is why I wanted to do, like, when I got offered with someone's like, would you want to come on and do this? And I was like, fuck yes. Because I want to tell you, you are the reason that I do impressions.
What?
Which I've never said publicly to anybody ever. This is like the first time it's ever come out, ever.
That's You're crazy. Talking about my Comedy Central pilot.
Yes.
Yeah. I had a sketch show pilot with Comedy Central.
That's right.
That was a long time ago.
Yes, it was.
Oh, and they asked Jonathan.
They asked me if I could do impressions, and I was like, and I guess, I don't know.
Was
if
I in the room?
You were not in the room. Mm. You did not care enough to show up.
No, I was on the road.
No, I'm kidding you. They're like, doesn't he have FaceTime? And they're like, he does, but he just doesn't care. And they just kept saying that, and I was like, all right, I'm done.
He doesn't care
about Jonathan Kite, and I still didn't get it. But the thing was, like, I'll tell you what it was crazy about it was because they asked me, I could do a lot of accents and stuff, you know, and I had done impressions, but nobody current. Like, I used to say that I could do, like, my Branson, Missouri 5. Uh-huh. So, like, people that, you know, like, I could do Christopher Walken, Bill Cosby, like, old, there's a film star named Peter Lorre, and then Tim Gunn from Project Runway, and Brad Garrett from Everybody Loves Raymond. And but
that's a good one.
And I'm a huge, like, the thing is about, when you do somebody...
That's a hard one, by the way.
Brad Garrett, very nice.
That's so good. Do it again.
I'm Brad. I go, everybody loves Raymond. Nobody loves Brad.
And, but I loved it. And my bit with him was that... Because I guess he got into an argument with TMZ, and so they weren't, like, covering his career.
Okay.
And so he... Like, I did him, like, doing a breaking news of, like... He goes, I'm doing crazy stuff, TMZ. Come by. You know, the gay code is 1911. You're not going to need it. It's going to be open. And him just, like, asking TMZ to come back and cover the crazy antics of Brad Garrett. But I remember I went in for that show, and they just asked my management or casting or whoever was like, can he do impressions? And my manager was like, yeah. But he didn't tell them that they were, like, people that you would never want to use on the show.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, the chancellor of Prussia from the 18th. He crushes it. Trust me. He crushed.
It's spot on.
Well, I used to do a bit about an impressionist who, like, only did people that he would you couldn't do them.
Yeah.
And so he would do Snoopy from Charlie Brown.
Hilarious.
And then the dad, like, it was in a bar mitzvah scene. It was, like, one of the sketches I wrote. But anyway, and he did Abraham Lincoln. Was his last one. And
that's
then
what he closed with?
Yeah, he closed with Lincoln. Because Lincoln really had a high voice. And, like, the whole bit was that Lincoln came back through a time machine and was like, who says I don't talk like that? And, like, it was the same.
That's funny. And the only thing that sells the character is that he has to put a top hat on.
That's right. Yeah. And the beard sucks. It's hanging off.
It's hooked onto the ears. That's funny,
like,
man.
Like, old glasses that, like, oh, Ebenezer Scrooge. And he goes, I freed the slaves. And then that he just said, like, random stuff. It's like, four score. But he didn't know any of
You know you're a bad impersonator when you have to, like, say who you're impersonating in your voice. Like, hey, everyone, Abraham Lincoln here.
Well, that's a lot of the impressions. Like, when people do walk-in.
And I'm Tom Cruise.
Right. That's right. Only sunglasses. Like, your impression can't be a prop, bro.
Yeah.
It can't be you just being like...
Yeah, exactly.
So, dude, that's so but funny. They didn't know, and they were like, at the end, they were like, diversity, and like, I think I can play a lot of colors of the rainbow, like, you know, but I thought, like, for me, they were just like, just do whatever you can do and go in there, and I did characters, and they go, well, we like your impressions, but who do you do that's, like, current and today? And in my mind, I swear to you, this is true. I go, oh, I'll have time, because they seem to like me. So what I just said about the pilots, it takes a long time to do these pilots. And when they cast this stuff, it could take months. So I was like, I could do Vince Vaughn, Barack Obama, and Nicolas Cage. And I could not do those impressions.
You just threw those out there.
I'm going to tell you for real.
Hilarious.
So what happened was, so they go, awesome. The callback is Monday. And this was Friday afternoon.
Oh, that's so funny.
And I went, this Monday?
Yeah.
Because I know guys who would like audition for SNL and Mad TV and all that stuff, and they were like, oh man, you got forever. You know, you sent in a tape, and if they like you, they're going to call
yeah.
you. But this was like a callback is Monday.
That's so funny.
And I was with my management company new. Yeah. And so I started to freak out because I go, oh my God, I'm going to come back and I don't do these. So I stayed in my room, locked the door. And I watched Fred Claus for Vince Vaughn. I watched every Obama speech that was available, and I must have watched Con Air like 50 times yeah. that weekend.
Well, that's a good binge.
That's a good binge.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I sat there. It was a great weekend, by the way. It was just like, you know, that's how I spent my free time. It just happened that I had an audition.
Sounds like my weekend on the road.
And you're like, I wasn't even preparing. And the thing is, for me, like, I was like, maybe I can do this because I could learn accents pretty fast, and I just had to listen to them over and over and over. And I came back Monday morning, and I did those impressions.
That's so cool.
And that's how I started. And obviously, the moral of that story is I didn't get the show, but and that's what I'm here about. No. But it really like it really put me in a position where I then knew that if I had worked on stuff, that I could do it in terms of impressions.
That's badass, bro. I wish I was there.
It was crazy.
I sat in like the callbacks, and you did the callback, but was it in New York or L.A.?
It was L.A.
Damn,
it was L.A. Man, it was, and I remember just coming back and trying to do. I remember Vince Vaughn talked about the Cubs.
Yeah,
and or there was maybe a conversation with Vince Vaughn and Obama, and I just remember Nicolas Cage. Oh. My Nicolas Cage was a Nicolas Cage auditioning for Peter Pan.
Do it.
Because I'm like, the older he got, he kept auditioning for like younger dudes. Like when he was Johnny Blaze. Remember he was Johnny Blaze?
Ghost Rider.
I'm like, that dude is like 17.
How is sexy in the description for this guy?
Or they were like sexy and someone's like, damn it, get me Cage. Yeah. Speed dial. But you know what's crazy is when Johnny Blaze, when he's a kid and he has like all the trauma and then he becomes Ghost Rider, the guy that they use, I'm like, why did they use that dude? That guy's the right age, and they were trying to pretend that guy was like 16. I'm like, dude, that guy had a rough 2 years.
Oh, the guy that was playing the younger?
Yeah.
I'm like, how many wars did he just come back from, bro?
Because that was the funniest thing. And here's the thing. I always, because I get this question about like, because I do political impression and stuff like that, but I love Vince Vaughn, I love Nick Cage, and I love Obama. So that was the cool thing for me. Even though I have like fun about Nicolas Cage, I really like him and I have all of his movies and stuff, you know. Yeah. I just thought that was something that I'd never seen talked about on there. And so like the thing was coming up with the bits too.
Yeah, you had to write the bit.
Right, because you guys were a sketch show. So it wasn't like I could just come in there and just be like, hey, this is Nicolas Cage, how are you? And I'd have to say the name. You know what I mean?
Good.
So people knew who I was.
That's
and,
good.
Thanks. But he's hey. How are you? But it was him being like, you know, he was like, it was like Tinkerbell dying.
Yeah.
And then he was like, you have to fucking clap your hands. And it was just him like beating his hands together. Because he makes every moment intense, even saving fairies. But
that makes me sad. I wish that show would have happened.
I'm here now. Wait, so I never found out. So you guys, it was the Jokoi sketch show? Is that what it was called?
It was just the project. But it was, that was 11 years, 10 years ago?
Yeah, man, it was a lot. It was, I think it was
longer
than that.
My whole pitch to Comedy Central, because they gave me the deal, right? And I was like, I want to do a sketch show, but I want the sketch show to look like America. Like, I want a diverse crew.
I remember that they said that.
I go, I want an Indian actress. I want a black actor. I want a Latino. I want an Asian. Like, I want it to look like America. Like, that was like, when it comes on TV, I want everybody in middle America that has other ethnicities go,
totally.
Hey, that's me.
Somebody like me.
I get to watch TV.
Totally.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's what I wanted. And that was the push, dude, and damn, it didn't happen.
It was ahead of its time, because think about now.
I know.
What you think about, it's the same thing where people are, not that it's catching up, but it's like there's more with all the streaming options and stuff like that. Yeah, networks are tough, because I remember when I...
They only looked at it for like 30 minutes after we shot. They gave me the full-on pilot deal, too. We shot it and everything.
Did you shoot it here in New York?
Yeah, we shot it in L.A.
And they were like,
they looked at it for 30 minutes and they were like, yeah, we're going to pass.
Did they?
I was like, really?
Did they go through? Did they know what you guys were shooting? Because I did a show with, that we did on Fox that was, like essentially, it was like a Jamie Foxx sketch show.
Yeah.
And I remember the network was like super involved. It was for Fox. And so
I remember the hype on that.
They knew like what we were doing. It wasn't like they just showed up and were like, nope. You know, so they were sort of
they were every sketch, man, that I wrote was ripped to fucking shreds, man. They were like, oh, yeah, can we make this one blah, 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 and make this one a little more blah. I'm like,
so the network was involved through the whole process, and then they watched the thing at the end?
No, they came in during the writing process.
Okay.
So while we were writing it.
And did they have a say who you guys cast?
Yeah, they were. It was heavy, man. Like, I was only in for the final audition, basically.
Oh,
so, like, the
last
callback. So, like, I guess the network callback.
Yeah.
So it was,
like,
all of us in the room, and I sat in the corner, and you know, I gave, like, my yay or nay.
Uh-huh.
That was crazy, man.
That's crazy. And the truth was they
sat in some of the LA auditions too. Some, not all of them.
Well, I don't even know to be like I remember that stage of it, and then I just think that they were like, it's not moving forward. Or that's what they say it again. You don't know why.
You don't know.
And so I thought they'll take, because they did say diverse sketch show, and I said maybe they already have a white guy, or because that's the one that.
I wanted a Ukraine guy. I remember asking for a Ukraine guy.
I showed up in a hairnet for your audition.
I was like, man, if this guy had mustard on his shirt, I'd take him.
Dude, I kept just wearing the hairnet, and I'm like, someone's going to cast me. Thank God two broke girls understood me.
This is such a cool story, Jonathan.
It's true, though. It's 100%. And the funny thing is that you never know, like, because like sometimes, you know, people go, damn, I didn't get the job. Mm. Or they beat themselves up over it or whatever. And the truth was, like, even with the Jamie show, which I went in for the first time, I didn't get that one. And then they called me midway through rehearsal. And they were like, hey, man, can you do Steven Seagal? And I told them yes, and I couldn't do Steven Seagal. And I watched Steven Seagal
for a weekend.
That's like another. That's like my '80s movie. I'm like, here we go again.
Yeah.
And then I did.
And they freeze on your face.
And there's just credits.
Yeah, I could do that impersonation.
Moy canceled. There's just a montage. Just doing Steven Seagal faces in the mirror.
Yeah,
but now, you know, with that type of, but there was, you know, in that situation I got in there, but it all started there, and it was because I said, like, you know, I didn't beat myself up over it. I thought, because I think, you know, that was the other thing that we learned where I went to school. It's like, you don't know, man. And so if you beat yourself up over this thing, you may not even see what this thing is.
Hell yeah, man. That's what I preach all the damn time, man. Don't ever let anything knock you down. And don't ever let anybody say you're not good at something. Because that's what people think when they don't get an audition. They think literally three people are in the room, and when the door closes, they're just laughing at you.
Yeah, they're like,
some actors are like, what the fuck was that waste of time?
Yeah. You just hear as the door closes, boom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or they high five. We embarrassed another one. There was think we got that on tape?
There wasn't even film in the camera.
Yeah. That's funny.
But you don't know. And like,
but you can't think
you
like
know.
That, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't think like that. And even if they did think like that, you can't believe what they say.
And by the way, they're not always the thing is they don't have absolute power, because you think about how many times you've seen something on there and you go, oh, you could appreciate that person got that job, but then it doesn't go.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
people go, you're not right for that thing. And so it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's the, every now and then, like, you know, you're like, oh, it could have been me, or, you know, and things work out, but if you can't play that game your whole life, you don't know why that person got it.
No, I like the game that you said, man. You're training your instincts. That's the way to look at it. You're going in there, man.
You train your instincts.
Ooh, that's
what you guys need to write down. If you're listening to this right now, write down train your instincts. And you can use that for anything. You don't have to be an actor to use that in life. Use that for whatever it is that you're doing. Trust your fucking instincts. Your instincts is a power, bro.
Absolutely.
God gives you a power, instinct. He knows, you're like, it's in there. It's up to you to make that right decision.
Well, the training becomes, it's the trust, though. You have to trust your instincts more than anything. Like, you get that feeling in your gut.
It's telling you something.
You felt that about people. You felt it about situations.
Yes.
You know when to get out of a place when something's about to go down.
Yes. You ever get that feeling and continue doing it?
Yes.
And then it ends up bad?
Yep.
Because your fucking stomach told you it was bad.
And then you're like, let's see, let's wait this out.
So goddamn true.
Spoiler alert, it don't end well.
It doesn't work out.
That's so damn true, bro.
But that's, you know, and the biggest thing about this is that you'll get another opportunity. If you stick with it long enough, you know, that's the cool thing about our business, that it's not like, all right, that's it, pack your shit, go
yeah,
home.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah, man.
And I think people forget that.
Especially now. Like you said, with so many media outlets now.
Damn.
With so many outlets, there's opportunities.
Yeah, back then, it's so funny. Like you, because my old manager, we used to, you know, he'd been doing it for a long time. And, you know, I remember him going, oh, yeah, we used to call actors and be like, we have auditions because there was no internet.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, back then I could, you know, you think about how it used to be. So even if there's like a fear that builds up or you go, oh, I'm not getting it, you go, it's better now than it ever has been before. Yeah. And I don't think people realize that.
Can you imagine waiting for a call a rotary phone?
I was going to say, in a payphone.
In a payphone.
Wait, who do you know with a payphone? I have a payphone story.
Do you really?
Yeah. Well, it's somebody I know about. It's a famous actor that did it. It was Michael J. Fox. His story about waiting for the Facts of Life, the callback for Facts of Life.
I didn't know that.
He lived in an apartment with no phone, and the payphone right downstairs on the street was his payphone for callbacks, and he would fucking wait for callbacks for that phone, and that's how he got Facts of Life.
Wow!
Can you believe that?
No.
Can you fucking believe that? I'm so stupid.
Family ties.
Yeah. Family ties. That's how he got Family Ties.
That's how he got Facts of Life and turned it down for Family Ties.
Yeah. Can you believe that? One of our greatest comedic actors.
So amazing.
Waiting by a payphone on the street.
But imagine this. Imagine finding out later that you missed the phone call.
Oh, shit.
I mean, that is. Oh.
Because the dude that was on the phone was pretending to talk to someone because he was crazy.
Or because, yeah, he didn't want.
It was a crazy.
Oh, my God, dude. You know how many lunatics cost people their livelihood?
Because he's pretending to take a real phone call.
A guy just keep trying to get quarters out of it. You're like, you're not going to get the quarterback here. Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, the thing was, there's a story, and I don't know. I mean, it's been retold so many times, but with Eddie Murphy, with getting Saturday Night Live.
What?
That he was on a payphone, and that he did part of his audition on a payphone.
Yeah.
In the middle of Manhattan as a 19-year-old kid.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, that was like a... I mean,
you can look at it two ways on that story. You can look at it this way, like, God damn, the struggle's real. He had to get his audition on a payphone. Or you could be like, motherfucker was that talented. They auditioned on a payphone.
Well, that's what they had said. That he. They said, we don't even need to see him.
You don't need to see that shit. You saw stars and money come through that fucking phone. Like, God damn, who is this guy?
This guy's famous enough for radio.
Hey, he's on the subway. He's doing James Brown in a motherfucking hot tub. Bring him in now. Jewish Gumby. Who is this motherfucker?
It's amazing. He had it from the get-go,
yeah. Man. But that's why when you see like struggle when people say they struggle, it's like, yo, you're not struggling enough. You are struggling, but you can get through it.
I watched Spider-Man 3 the other day.
Okay.
And Peter Parker, played by Tobey Maguire, his character has a payphone. That movie came out in 2007.
That's funny.
And I'm like, was that like a throwback movie? Or I mean,
what was 2007? What was the phone? What was our technology?
We had cell phones.
Well, we had cell phones, but which one?
Razor.
The Razor was big.
Yeah. But there's like no cell phones in that movie.
But was it a timepiece then?
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't know, but it didn't feel that way because they didn't look
they dressed,
like...
They dressed like normal.
Yeah, and it didn't look like...
I hate movies that fuck with your mind like that. I hate it. Like, God damn it. You know what I mean? Like, when we watch... What's the one that we love? Dope? Was it Dope? The movie, the one that took place...
Yeah.
Like, that fucking confused me. It's are we in the 90s? Or are we in 2010? What is this?
But I thought they did a pretty good job of Dope.
No, what I'm saying is I couldn't figure it out. I was like, am I still in 1990? Right. Is this like, because the music and all that, the fashion, but yet it wasn't. Like, I couldn't get it. And then, what's the other one that threw me off? Pulp Fiction fucking threw me off, man, with the way they were dressing and like the music. Like, what's going on? I'm going crazy. Well,
cell phones are a good barometer.
But then what you're saying about Spider-Man 3.
No, I'm saying so I'm just guessing that they that they were like, he's poor.
Yeah.
So he has to use a cell phone or a payphone, which was in his apartment building.
Yeah, where did he find
it? It was in the hallway of his apartment building. I was like, what year is that?
Right. Yeah. What do you stick in a payphone? What the fuck do you... I don't even have quarters anymore. Yeah. Well, back in the day, I used to have a handful of quarters, man. I don't have... Yo, I barely have cash on me.
Right. No, but that's why all those parking meters take credit cards.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I don't have quarters. Like, who the fuck
has a
sack of nickels? Bro. Bro, anyone that owns a payphone company, you are literally catering to a very thin group of people.
Oh, super.
They're still around? Like whoever is in charge of the payphone company is like, yo, there is a group of people that still have pockets of change. We need to get that. No one has change. When was the last time you dug a quarter out of your pocket? Never.
It's been a while.
You know who those people are now? They own Coinstars.
Yeah. Yo, God, Coinstars is the shit.
Yeah. They're like, what do you do with that sock full of dimes?
Oh my God, you go to Coinstars.
You go to Coinstars, they take 20%.
Oh my God.
They're like the new agents, but no jobs out of it.
Coinstars is like winning a slot machine every time.
But what are the percentage? What do they take?
You go right to the register. It's usually at a supermarket, right?
Yeah. It's like CVS, right?
It's more depressing. It's like Ralph's. Yeah. Like everyone's buying like $1,000 worth of groceries, and here you are with a sock full of nickels and pennies. But I had
you're just trying to buy bills.
Yeah, yeah. I just want hard cash, right? And by the way, your quarters are like it's like 67 pounds, and you get like $26. And I used to do it, bro. I used to do that, man. When little Joe, when he was like maybe a year, bro, we used to go to Coinstars all the time. We would rummage up so many goddamn coins and nickels and shit.
What do they charge? Do you know what they charge? Is it?
It was like 10% or something like that, or 15%, something. Mm. Or 20. It was like 20%.
Okay. It's a lot.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, now I think about it, it is 20%.
Yeah.
That's now a lot. Think about it. Yeah, it was like, man, you could add 25, but these motherfuckers took 5. You know what I mean? Because it's 25%. Yeah, but
kind of could have just walked over to the register and paid for your groceries with the coins.
But no, that's back in the day where they humiliate you. They'd be like, no. No, you had to buy something, too. They weren't opening it. You know what I mean? Like, pack of gum. You're trying, like, hey, I'll buy this pack of gum, but do you mind turning this shit into cash? And then you're that
And then
asshole.
You return the gum?
Yeah. Oh, because they don't trust you, by the way.
No.
So they can't trust your word, so they got to count it.
They got to
humiliate you, and they fucking count the pennies by twos, like 2, 4, 6, 8, 10.
Would you trust somebody who came in with a pillowcase full of quarters?
No.
Absolutely
not. No, absolutely not. And even when they're rolled, you can't trust them, man. You know what I mean? Like some people come in with a roll quarters.
A bank won't take just coins.
No.
You have to roll them. They'll give you the papers.
Yeah, they'll give you the roll paper.
Really?
My grandmother used to do that.
She used to roll quarters?
Yeah. Pennies, the whole nine yards, man.
Bro, if I did that, every roll would be short one quarter. Come on. What are you, the mafia? You can just tell by the weight.
I think they weigh them. They do weigh it. Huh? They put it on scales.
Yeah. Stop.
Yeah, seriously.
Get the fuck out of here. Who has time for weighing quarters?
Wells Fargo.
Oh shit, dude!
Yeah, they're my. I remember I came in with all the coins, and they're like, "No, here's rolling papers."
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Here's some zippies. Go in there and blunts or coins, whatever you're gonna do. We're not taking loose nothing.
Dude, you were fun, Jonathan.
Thanks, man.
That was good, man. God damn it! See how fast these go? I hate it. Why do they have to go so fast? Jonathan, who is your inspirations? What I mean, do you consider yourself an impersonator?
I do it on the side. You know, to be honest with you, I when I first started doing stand-up, I did a lot of impressions because I think that people were convinced that I was the Ukrainian guy from Two Broke Girls.
That's hysterical.
So when I went on the road, you know, they were like, I would come out there without the accent, and that would, I think, kind of people would not freak them out, but they would be really surprised.
Yeah.
And so I said, no.
Are you an actor, motherfucker? Right.
You lied to us.
You lied to us all these seasons.
We want all our money back.
Where's the mustard on your shirt, dickhead?
I'm like, somebody give me mustard. Yeah, is this better? Do you love me now, America?
Come on.
So I would do some of those, and I already had them because I, you know, a lot of the personal stuff, people didn't, not that they didn't want to hear about my personal stuff, but the show was so successful and so big, people wanted to hear stories about the show. Nice. They were expecting, when I did it, you know, the first club I ever played was Comedy Zone in Charlotte, North Carolina.
I know exactly where that's
yeah.
at.
Yeah. And so I went in there and I remember like doing a little bit about the show and then talking about other stuff, but you could tell people were just kind of like, no, tell us more about Two Broke. So I was like coming up with stuff,
yeah.
you know, and then it sort of, you know, not that I ran out of stories because we had so many of them, but it was also like I was trying to do stand up as a departure from Two Broke Girls. So yeah. I didn't want to go out there and then also do Two Broke Girls stuff. So the impressions really helped because it was sort of in the same vein sonically of yeah. being like, oh, he's doing a voice and there's a thing that goes with it.
Yeah.
And then as that stand up sort of, you know, evolved for me, I really got rid of that stuff.
Yeah.
And then I'll do like micro impressions now. Like I did, I'll do like, you know, like Tom Hanks doing this or Nicolas Cage doing that. And yeah. they're just short, you yeah. know? And then so people kind of go, oh, well, we got that.
Yeah.
Or like, he did that for us. That's cool. And then I could tell them real stories.
Yeah.
And so I'll do like 3 micro impressions in a row. And then I'll like, and then over an hour or an hour and a half, I'll do, you know, like blocks of 3, maybe like 4 of them. So you'll get 12 impressions or something. And so people kind of go, oh, and then when I do, you know, stuff like this, or, you know, when you do, oh, I've got to do all the press for those things, you know, you get on and what are morning radio guys, or you know, you go to those small towns or big cities and they kind of go like, all right, man, we got, you know, we got Liam Neeson in the studio.
And you're like, all right,
man. You know. Can you do a station ID as Bill Cosby from prison?
Yeah.
Hey, everyone, you're listening to Bill Cosby. This is Power 105.
This is Power Bottom. That's what it's about to become.
You're going to love these guys. They're a kook.
And like, yeah, come see my show.
Yeah, come see my show. I'll do more of those.
But that's what it is. So like you, and then, so then I had to figure out like how to do the impressions that people were like, you're on morning radio. You got to get people. They don't know what you sound like because of the show. So how could I do that? Because then I would do the impressions exclusively on the air, and then I'd go to the stand-up show at night, and people were like, oh, you did impressions all morning, so I thought that's what you were going to do. And you kind of go, no. So that, you know, it's been a weird journey of trying to just navigate my way through to
figure out. Process is fun, man. I love that process.
Yeah.
It's weird, but it's fun, man, because you really learn and figure yourself out.
Oh, my gosh.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I remember when I first started touring, you know, as a headliner. And I remember when the hour special came out, and I was done, because I remember going, I can't do that shit anymore.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's got to retire, and I really had to dig deep into my soul, and try and figure out a new hour. You know what I mean? And I mean, I could have still done it, but then I wouldn't have felt good about myself.
Right,
you know,
right.
And I know people wouldn't have laughed as hard. You
but
know
also,
I mean?
It's about building, you know, like for me, it was building a following. And if people thought that they were going to see the same stuff every time, they'd only come back once.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, somebody like Seinfeld who says that he does the greatest hits.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, because he's been doing it for so long and he has jokes that people show up to see.
Yeah.
It's like going to see Aerosmith.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, yeah, the new stuff, but also Dream On, please.
Yeah.
And you know, no one ever gets tired of hearing that last note.
Yeah,
no
one. Like a lady. What the fuck? Come on.
Steven Tyler's like, I've
been waiting all day.
I got a new one called 2018.
Fuck your new one.
I'll listen to it on Spotify.
Yeah, man, do the Armageddon theme song.
Yeah, I can stay awake. We'll help you.
Hurry
just
up.
To hear you. But that's the truth. Like, you're like,
we'll lead you into it.
Let's go. Oh, bro.
You have your own mic.
I brought one. We're doing a new
hey,
you got an amplifier.
Walk
can stay
this way,
come on.
I want both versions of Walk This Way. Bring Run DMC out, motherfucker.
I'll play it. You're holding it up like you're Say Anything.
Yeah, I got it.
Boombox. This is what we're doing, Tyler.
Hey, I don't know these people behind me, but I'm pretty sure they want the same shit I want.
Right, everyone. And we're just like, it's like a mob with Frankenstein.
Man. That's a good character, man.
But it's true.
That's a fucking good character. We heckle the headlining rockets.
The greats.
Yeah, man. Fuck them, dude.
Hotel California. What
again?
The fuck?
Again.
10 times in a row.
You're leaving?
What?
I don't think so.
I don't think so, motherfucker.
That's the thing. A lot of people, you hear that. Like, you know, like my... my cousin, who's a musician, just his band opened for Beck.
Yeah.
And, you know, Beck just has so many hits.
Your brother? You
know? My cousin.
Your cousin opened for Beck? No,
yeah, he's in a band called The Voids with Julian Casablancas, who was the lead singer of The Strokes, is the lead singer of The Strokes. They have a new album coming out. But anyway, and I asked him every time when they go on the road, I'm like, does Beck do the hits? They were just on the road with him. And he's like, yeah. And because there's like obviously a lot of music fans there, but you know, Beck is so, I mean, he's famous for many reasons, but he got radio hits.
Yeah.
And people show up, you know, and it's like, a lot of people want to hear that. Yeah. And there's like music guys that are like, no, we want to hear the stuff that nobody wants to hear.
Yeah, exactly.
No, and you're like, when you have radio hits, you don't get out of the venue without playing those. It's going to be a riot.
Oh, my God. I remember I saw Elton John in Vegas, the Million Dollar Piano Show, and I can't remember what the last song was, but it was something like, it was either Leave On or it was like Yellow Brick Road, and I remember I was there and I was just like, it was like waiting for your, like, it's like you're alone at soccer practice and everyone else has been picked up.
Yeah.
And you're just waiting for your dad to show up and you're like, come on, man, you gotta play Leave On or what?
Yeah.
That's so true. Right. And then he does it and you're like, I know you love me, Dad. I know you love me, Dad. All right. I know it took you some time. There's some traffic. I get you, buddy. And he's Leave On and we're just like, but it's true.
Bro, it's so true when they do their fake encores, and I love it though. Oh, I fall for it every time.
Me too.
Because you know the one song.
Come on.
He's
not leaving. He's like, good night, everyone. And then we're like,
you're not.
Not good night.
Come on.
And it's one of those things with jokes that I'm not established like that. I don't have, because I remember when I first, I was so lucky. The first guy I ever opened for was Pablo Francisco. Mm-hmm. And you know he does that. He did the Little Tortilla Boy bit, you know, at the end, which was like, you know, mega for him.
Yeah.
And when I did shows with him, people would yell out Tortilla Boy, Tortilla Boy.
Yeah.
And he didn't do it, and not because he was like fuck you. He was just kind of like, I need to be moving the moving the chains and stuff. And so until I think I'm at like that level of like the legendary Seinfeld, you know, where people are really coming out for those things consistently. Like I really feel the same way. I got to keep pushing. Keep digging, pull out stuff because it trains that muscle.
I just don't do it. And they yell all my shit the whole show. I just won't do it. Yeah. I literally write so much, goddamn it. I have to. It's just, it's me. And even if I do like give in and finally do the one joke that they've been wanting, it won't, I can't deliver it the same way.
It's always
man.
A Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
It's always a different version of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It's not the one they remember.
Nah. Yeah. I mean, I'll give them something, but it's a slice of life. It's different.
Yeah.
But I always got to change.
I did it one time. I used to do a GPS joke because I was trying to figure out about it, because I would do impressions, but then everything was like too inside baseball. Because you talk about Hollywood and then people maybe in the middle of the country would be like, we don't know what you're talking about. Like, we get the guy you're doing, but we don't understand the situation.
Yeah.
So I was like GPS, and I remember like there was a lot of different voices. So I was like, you know, you could choose the voice on it. And I used to do this whole bit about, you know, about celebrity GPSs. And I did Al Pacino as a GPS. And then I retired it. I hadn't done it for years.
I already love the setup.
I'd love to hear that.
He would stress you out just being like, all right, turn left, you know. And he would just be out there, you know, and he would just be like, make it, goddamn. And he's just screaming at you in your car, right? And so I do the impression, whatever. And then I hadn't done it in a very, very long time, and then I was at Laugh Factory, actually, here in Hollywood, and this guy in the front row, I mean, he wasn't rude, but he was like, do Al Pacino GPS, and I wasn't even, like, doing impressions. I was talking about, like, whatever, something else, you know, and he was like, do Al Pacino, and I looked at him, and I was like, this isn't, and I turned to him, and I was like, dude, do you think stand-up comedy is, like, choose your own adventure?
Yeah.
I was like, you know, why would I do that? And he goes, come on, and he goes, can you please, my girlfriend and I are here because we heard you do it, and we came to this show hoping you would do it.
What
and they
the
were in the
fuck?
Front row, and his girlfriend and him were just like, hi, can you do Al Pacino?
Oh my God.
And it was like packed. So I was like, all right, did you guys? And they're like, we promise. We came to see if you would do that thing. So I was like, all right. And then I actually polled the audience. And I'm like, if the audience wants to hear it, I'll do it. And I was like, do you guys want to hear Al Pacino do the whole GPS thing? And then they were on board. So I was like, all right, well, then thank this audience because then I'll do it.
Yeah.
So then I did it. It was the only time I've ever taken like requests. And because the only other time I'll do it is I'll be like, can you guys name an impression? I'll see if I can do it. So that's what I would do for the audience.
Oh, that's cool.
And then I remember that was that that is so nerve-wracking because you never really know if it's going to go well or not. And my God, it was it was that
turn left.
All right. But then you know it doesn't update you fast enough, so it's like make a goddamn left. It's just like screaming at you.
Funny.
Oh, rerouting.
Turn back around.
You son of a bitch.
You son of a bitch.
Just, you know, and everyone knows who Pacino is and everyone knows his GPS. So it's like, it works in middle America.
Dude, that's awesome, man. I love our road. That's what I love about this business, man. As long as you stay on the same path, man, you keep going forward and just put on those side flaps. You know what I mean? Don't worry about what's going on your right side, your left side. Just stay focused on your fucking path.
That's right.
Things will happen, bro. Yeah. And that's great, man. I'm glad our journey brought us here, dude.
Me too, man. This is crazy. Stories, bro. To meet you after all these years. That's so funny.
God bless you, Jonathan.
Thanks, man.
Jonathan Kite on the Koi Pond. Go to his website. It's it's jonathankite.com.
No, it's official Jonathan Kite. Jonathan Kite is a guy who lives in England who's an energy healer.
Yeah.
And he's had
fuck that energy.
Fuck that guy.
He has had that website since the beginning of websites.
Fuck him.
Since, and it was like, and I emailed him one time to be like, yo, man, could I get this out? And then he was asking for like 10 grand. And
I
it
would says, love 10 grand.
It's coming soon, is what it says.
Well, it never came.
It never came.
He's not an energy healer at all.
No, my God.
He's an energy stealer.
Oh, that is hilarious. That's what I should have said. Thanks for nothing, you son of a bitch. And so official Jonathan Kite, and then my Instagram is at Jonathan Kite, and I'm doing a podcast with my cousin that I just talked about called Kites of the Round Table.
Oh, I love it.
We're going to be on iTunes, and all the information is on Instagram and Twitter.
Dude,
and,
you're a talented person, man. God bless you.
Thank you so much for having me,
man. Yo, like I said, man, that's that journey, you guys. Stay on path. Stay focused. And just stay positive, man.
Always.
That negative shit will just kill you. You know what I mean? It kills you from the inside. It kills everything around you. I love you guys. Stay motivated. Bye.
She would tell me stories how she used to hang on Queen Street. I thought, well, that's ironic, cause she looked royal. But I paid no mind cause she was acting like she needs me. I thought I had no time so I would make her way. Yeah. Now who'd have thought that she would walk away from me? Sleeping on her, now I'm wide awake. Damn, I miss the days when she would say she needs me. If I had the time with you again, I would like to be way more than friends. Girl, if you give me a second chance.